It is my pleasure to introduce to you Reggie Littlejohn, founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, an international coalition to expose and oppose forced abortion, gendercide, and sexual slavery in China. An acclaimed international expert, she has revealed China's one-child policy to be a systematic, state-sponsored violence against women and works tirelessly to end forced abortion and gendercide. As a graduate of Yale Law School, Littlejohn has represented Chinese refugees in their political asylum cases. Her topic, why is gendercide the real war on women?
Good morning, and thank you. Before I start, I'd just like to say there's going to be a petition circulating at your tables to end forced abortion in China. And if you sign that petition, please put your email address legibly. And that's a way that we can keep in touch with you. And once your table has signed, please give it to the next table. It's an honor to be here. I love Cleveland. Cleveland is one of the great cities of America, not just because of the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but most importantly, because my husband was born here. So I love Cleveland. I spoke here several years ago, and a lot has changed since then. I'm wondering how many people were here several years ago when I spoke. About maybe a quarter of you. All right, well, when I spoke here last time, there was the blind activist Cheng Guanchen was still in detention. We were worried that he would die. And as you might remember, the Lyceum kids sang this beautiful song and they wore dark glasses in his honor. Well, since then, those who have been following this know that he has been released. And I think that the prayers that happened here were a big part of that. Also, last time I was here, I spoke about forced abortion and the sex selective abortion of baby girls. But since that time, Women's Rights Without Frontiers has launched our campaign to end gendercide called the Save a Girl campaign, which you will be hearing more about. But now we are actually saving lives of baby girls in China, and we will offer you the opportunity to help us with that. And thirdly, you'll hear more about this later, but my husband and I were able to rescue a couple of girls from China, and we are now raising them as our own daughters. So a lot has happened in the last 3 years. People ask me sometimes, how did you get from being a high-powered, big firm lawyer to dedicating your life to helping women's rights around the world, becoming an international women's rights advocate? I think anyone who has dedicated their lives to ending the suffering of others has a story to tell. You see, your pain holds the key to your purpose. In my case, it all started with an innocent question I had on the playground as an elementary school girl. Who's better, girls or boys? In my elementary school, girls and boys separated themselves at recess. So the boys went and played kickball, which seemed like a fun sport to me. The girls were consigned to playing foursquare, which I thought was hopelessly inane. So one day, I presented myself on the kickball field, and the boys let me play. I held my own and then went to the PE teacher and convinced him to make kickball a co-ed sport. We then fielded the first and probably the only all-girls kickball team, and we did all right. We did okay. And what that did is it resolved the issue in my mind of who's better, boys and girls, boys or girls. With infallible 10-year-old logic, I decided that girls are definitely better, because we can do everything boys can do, plus we can have babies. As I grew up, I lived out this idea. My crowning achievement, I got pregnant during my third year at Yale Law School. My grades actually went up while I was pregnant. Graduated and gave birth to our son. And again, I just thought to myself, see, I can do everything the guys can do and make a baby at the same time. I began working as an attorney in a major law firm, and everything went as planned until we tried to have our second child. And I had a miscarriage, and I remember just lying on our living room couch and bleeding our baby away and saying to my mom, why is it that God would allow me to conceive of this child that is so desperately wanted and would be so well cared for, and then take that child away. And I'll never forget my mother's words. She said, you know, we can never understand these things, but I believe that God allows them to happen for a purpose. Soon after that, I had a second miscarriage, and then my husband and I gave up trying. I walled off the pain of losing those babies and lived as though it had never happened. Then one day, an email flashed across my computer at work. As an attorney, a Chinese woman was seeking political asylum, and she had been forcibly sterilized. I knew that China had a one-child policy, but I had no idea that it was enforced through forced abortion and forced sterilization. This woman, who was a very beautiful and very, very delicate small woman, had been literally grabbed out of her home, screaming and pleading, held down to a table. They cut her open and tied her tubes with no anesthesia. And she got a massive infection, had chronic back pain, chronic abdominal pain, and chronic migraines for the rest of her life. Then, one day in 2003, personal disaster struck. I had to have bilateral mastectomies with implant reconstruction, which is normally only a couple months off work, but during the surgery, I had implanted inside my body an MRSA staph infection, the MRSA superbug, and went overnight from being a high-powered litigation lawyer to somebody who was flat on my back begging God to spare my life. And I became, because of the infection and because of all the surgeries that I had to have because of that infection, I became disabled for 5 years. And during that time, I feel like the Lord transformed me from dedicating my life to making a lot of money as a lawyer to using the skills that I had as a lawyer to help the women and babies of China. I said to him, you know, if I'm going to live, please help my life be worth living. May my life mean something. And this is what he did. I began reading the Bible cover to cover, and one scripture stood out from all the rest. This is Proverbs 24:11-12. Deliver those who are drawn towards death, and hold back those stumbling towards a slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the heart consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his works? Since I knew about the forced abortion and forced sterilization under China's one-child policy, I felt absolutely morally obligated to do something about it. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing, Edmund Burke once said. And the book of James in the Bible says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, for them it is sin. Not wanting to be guilty of sin, I began researching almost obsessively everything that was going on about the one-child policy and discovered that there really was not a comprehensive analysis of it on the internet or anywhere else that I could find. All just a piece here, a piece there, like data rubble. Then one night, my mind just started to put everything together into this repugnant puzzle. And what I realized is that all the so-called unintended consequences of the one-child policy are causally connected. So the first thing that struck my mind is that what is unique about the one-child policy is not abortion. Many countries have abortion. What's unique about it is state-sponsored coercion. So we have Planned Parenthood in the United States, but we don't have Planned Parenthood police who keep track of everybody's menstrual cycles and have a quota of how many abortions and how many sterilizations people have to have in their city, and who will come in and break your door down in the middle of the night and grab you out of your bed and strap you down to a table and force you to abort a baby that you want up to the ninth month of pregnancy. This is what the women of China are dealing with. And by the way, you may have heard that China is easing up on the one-child policy. This is not true. What's happened is they have said that if one member of a couple is an only child, they can have a second child. That only affects 11 million couples nationally, which in a population of 1.3 billion is a drop in the bucket. And they have not gotten rid of the birth permits. So whether you have to have one child or two children, you have to have a permit to have that child. Otherwise, you're subject to forced abortion unless you have the money to buy your way out of it, which most people do not. So this is a unique issue that can bring the pro-choice and the pro-life advocates together. No one supports forced abortion because it's not a choice. And just to bring home to you the nature and violence of forced abortion, I'm going to show a video now called Stop Forced Abortion, China's War Against Women. And there is one graphic image in there. It says, when I say, and I have a picture of a woman, if you don't want to see a graphic image, then close your eyes for about 10 seconds. I'm a litigation attorney, and in the 90s, I represented a client who had escaped China. I represented her in her case for political asylum in the United States, and she had been forcibly sterilized. That was my introduction to the reality behind the one-child policy. In fact, China's one-child policy causes more violence against women and girls than any other official policy on earth. I call it China's war on women and girls. When I say forced abortion, I mean women are literally dragged out of their homes or off the streets. They can be jailed in family planning jail cells, forced to abort children that they want. And this can happen all the way up to the 9th month of pregnancy. Some of these forced abortions are so violent that the women themselves die along with their full-term babies. One case that I'll never forget is of a young woman who was 7 months pregnant without a birth permit. So that would be an illegal pregnancy, who was walking down the street, and she was grabbed by family planning cadres, dragged off the street, strapped down to a table, forced to abort the baby that she very desperately wanted. And in the end, one of the medical personnel came to her with a body of her aborted baby and said, "You need to pay for this so that we can dispose of the body." And she said she didn't have any money, so they just laid that body right next to her in the bed. And I've got a photograph of her looking down and just grieving the loss of this 7-month-old baby that was forcibly aborted. It does not matter whether you are pro-choice or pro-life on this issue. No one supports forced abortion because it's not a choice. And this violence must stop. My goal in establishing Women's Rights Without Frontiers is to end forced abortion and sexual slavery in China. And to that end, I have testified before Congress, I've addressed the European Parliament, briefed the White House. Started this several years ago, no one was talking about the one-child policy. And now, because of the documentation that has been generated, two things have happened. Number one, the Chinese Communist Party cannot deny that the one-child policy is enforced through forced abortion, forced sterilization, and infanticide. And number two, it seems that almost everybody is talking about it at this point. It's become a household issue. Stop the violence. End China's war on women.
Forced abortion is not a choice.
To give you an idea of the scale of this problem, in the United States, we've had about 58 million abortions since the Roe v. Wade decision. In China, by contrast, the Chinese Communist Party years ago boasted that they had prevented 400 million lives, which is greater than the entire population of the United States and Canada combined. That statistic is old. It's more than that now. The Chinese Communist Party has reported that they have about 13 million abortions a year. They have four times our population and 13 times the number of abortions a year. Many of those are forced. So that comes out to about 35,000 a day, or almost about 1,500 an hour. So in the time that I'm speaking to you, more than 1,000 babies will be aborted in China, many of them forcibly. Beyond this, because of the traditional preference for boys, girls are selectively aborted. Experts estimate that up to 200 million women are missing in the world today due to sex-selective abortion, otherwise known as gendercide. So the 200 million number is more than all the casualties of all the wars of the 20th century. This, I would submit to you, is the real war on women. So I'd like to show you now the trailer for the It's a Girl film. This film is a 63-minute documentary about gendercide in China and India, which we have shown in the European Parliament, British Parliament, the U.S. Congress. But I'm going to just show you the 3-minute trailer for it now.
Today, India and China eliminate more girls than the number of girls born in America every year.
Genocide is the deliberate, systematic destruction of an ethnic or religious group. Gendercide is the deliberate, systematic destruction of a gender group, usually girls.
Why are Indian households secretly and brutally eliminating daughters from their family system?
They just wet the cloth and they fold it like this and they put it on the face so the child can't breathe. Immediately the child will die.
But what this is an entire system, a social machinery that says we don't want females.
But the real problem started after I became pregnant. They started asking me for a sex determination. They wanted to know if the children are girls or boys. They started torturing me to get an abortion done. What should I do to save my daughters?
कि उसके सिर इलाके देखा तो वो तो यहाँ पे गले पे पूरा निशान पड़ा हुआ है निशान पड़ने के बाद तब हमें फिर रोना पीटना हमारे तो होश ही उड़ गए थे लड़की को देख के कि इसने मार कैसे दी
Thank you.
between the lives lost under the one-child policy, the 400 million, and gendercide, the 200 million, the greatest hemorrhage of human life in the world is flowing out of China and India today. As a young girl, I had never dreamed that the answer to my innocent question, who's better, boys or girls, could mean a death sentence to hundreds of millions of baby girls. Because of this gendercide, there is a shortage of women in China and India, and that is in turn driving human trafficking and sexual slavery. And the despair of the Chinese women has led to the fact that China has the highest female suicide rate of any country in the world. According to the World Health Organization, 590 women a day kill themselves in China. I was completely broken by all of this. And when I regained my strength, my husband and I actually sold our home and put down $50,000 to get this work off the ground. That's when I founded Women's Rights Without Frontiers. So I've gone from helplessly grieving for the women who are victims of forced abortion and the women and babies are victims of gendercide to leading an international movement to end it. Why do I travel the world to expose and oppose the death and destruction caused by China's one-child policy? It's to build the international political will to end it. The Chinese Communist Party may say they don't listen to people internationally. In fact, they do. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And so I speak the truth to China. And I've appeared many times, perhaps 20 times on Voice of America, which is the official U.S. broadcast into China. Gets right over that Chinese internet firewall and speak directly the truth into the nation of China about the one-child policy. Some people say, why don't you just let the Chinese people handle their own problem? Because China is not a democracy. It is a brutal totalitarian regime. And when people stand up against the one-child policy, they end up like the blind activist Chen Guanchen, who exposed the fact that there were 130,000 forced abortions and sterilizations in just his city, Linyi City, in just 1 year. That's 2005. And for that, he was jailed and tortured, denied medical treatment, and through a miracle, God basically helped him escape. And through massive negotiations between the United States and China, we were able to get him to the United States. But I'm going to show you a video called Powerless Ones that somebody just sent me on his own inspiration. I did not commission this. Somebody just sent it to me as a gift because he was so inspired by the work of Chen Guanchen and Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Chen Guanchen leading the fight to end forced abortion from Chinese soil and Women's Rights Without Frontiers leading the fight internationally, that he created this video about us. So I'm going to play this for you, and it also contains graphic images, but I think that this particular crowd is accustomed to that. So please play Powerless Ones.
Counting blessings in a summer breeze, pretty clouds are floating over me, and every rose has such a lovely face. Could this world be such an evil place? Stars appearing in the fading sky, catch a twinkle of a satellite. Feels like someone's looking down at me. Could they see what I don't wanna see? Live, 'cause it's never guaranteed.
Me, it's a true miracle that Chang Guanchen is in the United States, and that I never ever thought I would see his face, shake his hand, and now we're working together to end forced abortion in China. We recently spoke together at the Heritage Foundation, together with Congressman Chris Smith on this issue. So it's something that just doesn't happen. So it's made all my efforts worthwhile. But in addition to that, as I mentioned, we have started an actual on-the-ground effort in China to save baby girls. So we have two things that we're doing. We do international advocacy to raise the visibility of the issue and to build a political will to end it. And I'll be speaking three times at the United Nations in the next week and a half on this issue. Then we also have on the ground a network of field workers who have connections with the local hospital and clinics, and when they find out about a woman who's had an ultrasound, knows that she's carrying a girl, and has scheduled herself for an abortion because she's a girl, or a woman who has given birth and is being pressured to abandon that baby girl just because she's a girl, our field worker will actually go to their door and say, please don't abort, please don't abandon your baby because she's a girl, she's a precious daughter, and we will give you a monthly stipend for a year to empower you to keep your daughter. And according to our field director, we have an overwhelming success rate and have saved over 150 girls at this point. So here's a few of our girls. That's actually a baby boy that was saved from forced abortion. So we also, if women are fleeing from forced abortions, we will get money to them every month so that they can survive. And she gave birth to a beautiful baby boy. And our Save a Girl program is the official program of the It's a Girl film. So I want to show you the DVD now, the It's a Girl action campaign, where you can see where this film has been all over the world, and also the footage of some of our real girls that we're saving in China.
...a movement to end gendercide in India and China. Since the It's a Girl International screening tour began in September 2012, hundreds of screenings have been held in more than 20 countries, hosted by students, faith-based groups, and community organizations. Governmental leaders and influencers participated in high-profile screenings and panel discussions at the British Parliament, European Parliament, and on Capitol Hill in the United States. The film also screened three times at the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. Global news media organizations have expanded the reach of the screening tour by reporting on It's a Girl and the issue of gendercide for audiences worldwide. The most common response to the film is the question, "What can I do to make a difference?" And so, the It's a Girl action campaign was developed in collaboration with grassroots partner organizations and the social engagement platform Causes.com to provide meaningful ways to get involved in the fight against gendercide. First, you can petition world leaders to take action in China. We are joining Women's Rights Without Frontiers in demanding that world leaders commit to helping end forced abortion and sterilization in China and take action against China's gendercide. Hundreds of thousands of people have already signed the petitions, with more signatures added daily. Attempts are being made to deliver the signatures, but so far the Chinese embassies have refused to open their doors. Help make our call for change even louder by adding your signature with a few easy clicks. Secondly, you can save a girl in China who is immediately at risk by supporting the Save a Girl campaign. Women's Rights Without Frontiers has a network of field workers on the ground in China who identify women pregnant with girls and at risk of sex-selective abortion, and women who are being pressured to abandon their newborn girls. Mothers are given a monthly stipend for the first year of the girl's life, helping provide for the basic needs of caring for the newborn. This stipend empowers the woman to resist those who want her to abort or abandon her daughter. Field workers also provide food, shelter, and assistance to mothers fleeing forced abortion and sterilization. A monthly donation for 1 year can save the life of a baby girl in China. The third component of the action campaign is to fuel a movement by telling everyone you know about gendercide. Please join us in using the power of Facebook, Twitter, and email to tell your friends, family, and the world that gendercide is real, is happening right now, and must end. A number of creative and engaging messages about gendercide are available at itsagirlmovie.com/share. There are also tremendous resources on womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. Together, we can expose the reality of gendercide and work to see dignity and value restored to the women and girls of India and China.
So when it feels overwhelming to try to end the one-child policy or gendercide in China, I have a big, thick binder of the girls that we're saving, and I just look at their little faces and just am so grateful every morning that God has given me the ability to be literally saving lives in China. It's just what keeps me going. Then in addition to that, we have our two daughters from China. So these are Annie and Lily Zhang. Their father, his name is Zhang Lin. He is a famous dissident writer in China. He's a former nuclear physicist, a very brilliant man who gave up what could have been a privileged life to fight for democracy in connection with the Tiananmen Square pro-democracy movement. And for this, he has been jailed and tortured for 13 or 14 years on and off since 1989, to the point where they've ruptured discs in his back. he was in a wheelchair. So when Annie was 8 years old, Annie is the shorter one, when she was 8 years old and her father got out of jail, he was so disabled that she was taking care of him. She was doing the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, because he could not get out of bed. When the Chinese Communist Party could not silence Zhang Lin, because he is extremely courageous and would just keep going no matter what they did to him, they went after his daughter, Annie. And one day in her elementary school, she was called into the principal's office out of her fourth grade classroom, and then four unidentified people kidnapped her and took her to the detention center and detained her overnight. 10 years old. She's known as China's youngest prisoner of conscience. And then they denied her the right to go to school. They put her and her father under house arrest so that they couldn't leave their apartment. They managed to escape house arrest. They became fugitives in China, and then they were caught. And when they were caught, Zhang Lin, the father, knew that he was going to go back to jail. So he got word out to me saying, Annie and I would like Annie to come to the United States, and because she can't have a normal life in China. And I said, okay, well, where's she going to go? And he said, well, we don't know. So I said, let me call my husband. And my husband is so awesome. I didn't even have to sit him down. I just called him up and I said, Rob, you know Annie Zhang? And he said, of course I know her. Her face is plastered in photographs all over our house. How could I forget her? I explained the situation and he took about 2 seconds and he said, she can come stay with us. And he said, is this the Chinese daughter that you've been wanting for so many years? And I said, I think so. So with the help of Jing Zhang, Congressman Chris Smith, and some very brave people in China, four of whom are still detained. There are four men in China who are still detained for helping Annie. We got Annie to the United States, her and her sister, and we're now raising them as our own daughters. So, can I have the picture back up? Okay, so this is Annie and Lily. This is our family together with my awesome husband. So in God's economy, as you know, I had two miscarriages, and I feel like God has replaced that for me with our two daughters from China. So how did I get here? None of this would have happened if I had not had the miscarriages. I feel like the miscarriages sensitized me to the issue, because I know what it feels like to lose a baby that you want. And although I've never gone through the violence of a forced abortion, I have lost children, and it also sensitized me to the issue of forced sterilization. I mean, I've dealt with infertility issues. I know how painful that is. I can't imagine being forcibly sterilized, especially without anesthesia. So I feel like these things, if you offer them up to the Lord, then that they will become your way of being the conduit of his love and his grace on this earth. And in many ways, my ministry, my mission to save these babies in China and these women is in honor of the two babies that I lost. In the Psalms, the Lord cries out, who will rise up for me against evildoers? Who will take a stand for me against those who do wickedness? I've said, here I am, Lord, send me. Like my mother said long ago, pain happens for a purpose. No one gets through life on this earth without significant suffering. What was the most painful experience in your life? I would encourage you to reach out to others who are suffering now in the way that you have suffered in the past. That your pain holds the key to your purpose. Now, if your heart is burning and if you want to join me in this battle to end forced abortion and gendercide in China, please come and see me afterwards. This is a huge mission, and we need all the resources we can get. Everyone who wants to help, we need your help. So please come see me afterwards. And by the way, I'm leaving after lunch, so don't think you're going to catch me at dinner. Catch me now. But perhaps your calling is different. You can find your own calling, because when you think about it, your heart will warm. And if you fan that warmth, it will ignite a spark. And if you fan that spark, it will burst into a blaze that can set the world on fire. Thank you.
thank you. Stay right here with us. We're going to ask a question or two. What has helped the most?
What has helped what the most?
Your cause. You had a number of action steps and things there in terms of getting word out or changing a government. I'm trying to summarize several questions, like how do they get involved? You kind of put that up there a little bit. But in dealing with a government, I mean, you're fighting an empire. So what's the strategy? How do you do that? We feel helpless is what I'm kind of getting from some of the questions.
Well, first of all, there's a very clear way that you can help. Okay, if you want to directly help, you can support the Save a Girl campaign. You go on my website and, you know, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org, and we ask people to give $25 a month or whatever you can, maybe a one-time donation. Some people give much more. And then you can be part of actually saving lives in China. And you just write Save a Girl on your donation. You can go on my website and you just sign this petition to end forced abortion. You can forward that to your friends. Forward my website. How many people here are on Facebook or on Twitter or some kind of social media? You know, I don't have a publicist. Like I said, we sold our house to do this. We're the lowest budget nonprofit that I know of, and like 92% of what we do goes into program as opposed to fundraising. So you can help us by tweeting about us. You can help us by posting about us. Now, in terms of what's helped my own, I think that what helps is my background as an attorney. You know, I went to Yale Law School. I was a litigator for 8 years. And so what that means is I know how to document things. I know how every single thing I say is well documented. And I'm known for telling the truth. I don't exaggerate, but I do document. And I know how to marshal facts in such a way as to create an issue and build a movement. So that's helpful. And then the other thing that's helpful, of course, is God. You know, we are running on a shoestring, and God has blessed us in amazing ways. For example, this It's a Girl film, right, that has gone all over the world. I had nothing to do with that film. It was completely somebody else's idea. Somebody else financed it. Somebody else had great publicists. And they invited me to be like the key expert on the one-child policy. That's a gift from God to me because it's great for the issue. It's great for the organization, and it's something I didn't have to pay for. And, you know, and like that thing that that you just saw, the Powerless Ones video. I mean, that is a great video. And if some songwriter just was a Christian songwriter was inspired to do this. We didn't pay for it. We didn't commission it. It was just given to us. So that's what keeps us going, because that's the kind of help we need, because we can't pay for these things, unlike other organizations.
Fantastic. Hey, we've got about 1 minute left, and we're going to have to do a quick turnaround for lunch. But why questions are always important. Why do you think the pro-choice people are so uninvolved in this?
I challenge the pro-choice people to become involved in this, because if you are really pro-choice, if that really is your agenda, then you should be jumping up and down about forced abortion because it's not a choice. If you really care about gendercide, if you really care about women's rights, then you're going to care about the sex-selective abortion of 200 million women. If you really care about women's reproductive rights, you're going to care about forced sterilization. And if you are not jumping down up and down about these things, do you really care about choice? Do you really care about women's rights? Do you really care about reproductive health? Or do you actually have another agenda? And could your agenda possibly be population control at any price?
You have been listening to Reggie Littlejohn, founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, and 2000.